Hands up, who's confused?
No, come on, you're not confused.
So I think Patrick's just made a prediction. He's just said that the Labour Party are going to be in power until 2015, because 1981 to 2000 was roughly Thatcher's period. Started, I think, 78. I'm not old enough to remember, but I think it was 78. And so it took her 3 years to figure out what to do. Then she introduced Next Steps, pushed everything out to agencies. And the Labour Party came in 1997, took them 3 years to figure out what to do, and from 2000 they're now bringing it all back in, and that runs till 2015, is that right?
Well, I'm sure that's what Gordon would like to do.
Maybe it's Blair, maybe he's going to renege on his deal. Now, I started in government in 2000, and I came from the private sector. I come from Citibank, where everything was easy because there was a boss and there was a budget, and you knew who was in charge and you knew what you had to do. And I came into government, into the Inland Revenue, in my do list of 10 things. Let's sort out online government, let's sort out tax policy, let's sort out a few things. And I figured 6 months, 8 months, 9 months tops, and it would be done. And 5 years later, I think I was on number three of my do list of 10, thinking, bloody hell, this is hard work. So first off, government is way harder than anything I'd seen before, and it takes big shocks to make it change. So if Patrick's tacking is right, something happened at the top end of that tack that caused a change, and for it to get bounced off again at the bottom of it, something big is going to happen again. I don't know what that big shock was, and I don't even know if there was a shock. And I'd be interested in your views. Did something occur where something appeared so radically not to work that created the conditions for that change, or was it just, okay, we're just going to change because it's time? Now, when I started looking at government, I'm going to break the cardinal rule of presentations and draw and talk occasionally at this while I talk, because I've only got 10 minutes. But when I started, we kind of looked at government as a set of fortresses, these little silos that Patrick talked about. And they are very much silos with little sort of arrows that they fire down at you. And if you come too near and you kind of hear, they're going to pour boiling oil on you, especially if you've got a view that you might actually want to change something inside government, God help you. And government saw itself as a step away from citizens. And we coined it the term of this thing called the scum line. Now, government believes it's on the clean side of the scum line, and this is all the dirt. And the citizen that sits out here says, well, hold on, I'm clean, you guys are the dirty ones. And you wonder how you kind of break down this barrier. Now, what we started to see was the idea that websites would start to do that, and that actually you could bring together government through technology by creating joined up websites. And over time, you would be able to fragment and push pieces both across and upwards so that this would start to appear as one. And that was my do list of 10. What we're going to do is we're going to pull this stuff together virtually, and we're going to move stuff away from government's control onto the other side of the digital wall, the other side of the scum line, and give power to the citizen. So that up in this cloud that people call the internet but doesn't need to be, you give away some of the control. So whereas now, if you want to change your address, you go to all these 50 zillion bits of government, 200 central government departments, umpteen different bits of local authority, unitaries, councils, parish, who knows what. You'd start to shift stuff up here, and gradually the last bit of government that had anything here would be the general ledger. It's a banking word, but it would be the books of the country, because everything else would be up here. Everything else would be in the power of the citizen. Now that's the shock that I see, because people have got used to it now. They've got used to seeing Amazon, and they've got used to seeing Google, and they've got used to the online banking. They've got used to having power over their own domain here. But it hasn't happened, has it? And let's face it, the e-government take-up curve, if this is 60 million, anybody know what it looks like? You're not e-government people, are you? It's kind of going like this, and Patrick and I were just talking about this, and there's an S-curve to be had somewhere, and we're still down here somewhere, with a couple of notable exceptions, perhaps the Inland Revenue or self-assessment. But what's not happened is the big stimulus of government that says, actually, we're going to start creating this virtual stuff. You've got DirectGov, for instance, that is doing a little bit of that. You've got business.gov doing a bit more. You've got accidental evolution, where what used to be the Inland Revenue and Customs and Excise becomes HMRC. And I say that was accidental, principally because I think people talked about it for so long that they thought it had happened, and then somebody looked and realized it hadn't, so they thought, quickly, better put that back together. It was at least 5 years we were having a conversation. And then when they brought that together, and Patrick talks about in his paper, Patrick says, it's actually now a big technology problem. It's nothing to do with technology. The real problem is that these guys look at businesses and people differently. That customs and excise has a view of a VAT entity, and the Inland Revenue has a view of a pay-as-you-earn or a corporation tax entity. They are fundamentally different and opposite and often incompatible. And so when we try and bring them together virtually, we trip over a few things. We trip over holding companies, and we trip over tax states, and we trip over self-employed people. So I'm still looking for the stimulus that creates that change, and I'm still looking for what the necessary conditions for success are. What is it that allows us to succeed in trying to make this happen? And the cynic in me says, you know, we're going to get there eventually, we're going to get there, because probably Patrick's theory is right. There's a general trend, it's going this way, and we're kind of shifting back and forth, trying to find the right way. I wish that the shocks were that big. I think we're kind of fiddling back and forth, trying to find something that does it. So the citizen has to start putting pressure on government to change, because their expectations are being raised, and some of that's happening, some things happening. And government has to figure out, what is it going to do with this morass of spend of, I don't know how much it is, 500, 600, 700 billion, something like that, you know, who knows, 2 trillion GDP, John, you'd know the answers to that, I don't. A large number, every number in government is large, that's the problem, and pretty soon you're talking real money, a billion here and a billion there. Yeah. So I'm kind of sceptical, really, because having looked at it for as long as I've looked at it, which is, you know, is a kind of a dot in the 400-year history of government since Cromwell, I'm kind of going, well, how do we make this change? How do we, if that's the tack point, what is it that forces people to down this way rather than just having them bump along here? And I don't know what that is yet. I thought part of it might be the citizen change up here, where people start demanding better service. They start demanding that their tax disc and their insurance are bought as a single item. So it would be demand-driven. And I thought part of it might be supply-driven, because people say, you know, we really can do this. There's an example of Patrick's paper where the Canadian government, I think it was, took a form down from 30 pages to nothing. They just deleted a form. Now, there are 13,000 paper forms in government, and I'd like to delete a few of them, but I'm buggered if I know how to, excuse me, because there isn't the incentive and the impetus here, unless John here owns it through the Gershon efficiencies, and that's got to be a good way to take out some costs. So I'm a bit of a skeptic, really, and I'm looking for the stimulus and the things that'll allow us to succeed in doing that. I don't really know what they are yet. Okay, your go, Supano.